Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your radio reading service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter from The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to begin today's readings with Earl Stanley Gardner's book, The Case of the Careless Kitten. In the previous chapter, we learned that Helen Kendall was waiting in the hospital to find out how her boyfriend was doing after having surgery. Lieutenant Tragg found her there and tried to reassure her that everything would be okay. But then he asked her a very scary question, and that was if he thought the shooting could have been for her rather than for her boyfriend. And now we begin chapter 17. Mason drove the car slowly. The long hours of sleepless activity had lowered his resistance to the cold chill of the night air. The kitten curled up on the seat beside him, snuggling closely for warmth. Occasionally, the lawyer, steadying the wheel with his left hand, placed his right hand on the kitten's fur, leaving it there for a few seconds until amber eyes would start purring in drowsy contentment. In the east, the stars were shrinking into invisibility. A faint illumination furnished a backdrop against which the roofs of the clustered apartment houses showed in a serrated silhouette. Mason slowed the car as he neared the place where Della Street lived. The entire apartment house was dark, save for the one vaguely lighted orange oblong, which would be Della Street's window. Mason parked the car, picked up the relaxed form of purring kitten, and slipped it under his overcoat, holding against the warmth of his body. He paused before the long list of tenants beside the mailboxes, pressed the bell of Della Street's apartment. Almost instantly, the electric buzzer, which released the catch on the street door, brought her answering signal. Mason pushed through the door and into the stuffy, warm air of the lobby. He crossed to the automatic elevator, pressed the button, and ascended to Della Street's floor. Amber eyes, nestled under the lawyer's coat, became apprehensive as he felt the upward motion. And then he skirmed around, digging sharp little claws into Mason's clothing, until an inquiring, startled head pushed its furry way out from the overcoat to stare curiously at the walls of the elevator cage. The elevator came to a stop. Mason opened the door, walked down the corridor, and paused before Della Street's door to tap lightly with the tips of his fingers, giving their private code knock. Della opened the door. She was still wearing the clothes in which she had been attired when Mason had deposited her in the front of the taxi stand at the hotel. "Gosh, I'm glad to see you. Tell me, did I get your signal straight?" she asked in a half-whisper, as Mason eased his way through the door and entered the cozy warmth of her apartment. "Darned if I know. What did you think I wanted?" "For me to go out to Lunk's place?" "Right. What did you do with him?" she said. "He wasn't there." "Oh, you've got the kitten." Mason took off his hat, placed the kitten in Della Street's outstretched hands, and sat down without taking off his overcoat. He frowned thoughtfully at the carpet. "Got a drink?" "Been keeping a pot of coffee hot for you. Spiked it with brandy. It will fix you up in a jiffy." She deposited the kitten on the davenport. "You sit there, Amber Eyes, and be a good kitten." Mason said, "Wait a minute, Della. I want to talk with you about..." "Not until you've had that coffee," she said, and vanished through the door into the kitchenette. Mason sat motionless, elbows resting on his knees, staring fixedly at the pattern in the carpet. Amber Eyes investigated the davenport, jumped down to the floor, allowed his nose to guide the way to the kitchenette, and stood at the door, giving a high-pitched meow. Della Street laughed and opened the door, saying, "And I suppose you want some milk, too?" Mason was still in the same position when she returned, carrying a tray on which were two cups of steaming black coffee. The aroma of fine brandy mingled with that of the beverage to caress the nostrils. Mesa lifted a cup and saucer from the tray and grinned at Della Street. "Here's to crime," he said. She sat down on the davenport, balanced the saucer on her knee, and said, "Sometimes that toast of yours scares me." Mason sipped hot coffee, felt the brandy warming his blood into circulation. "What happened?" he asked. She said, "I wasn't certain you could keep Lunk occupied much longer. I took the cab home and told the driver to hurry." "Give him the Belvedere address?" Mason asked. "Not the address. I told him to stop at the corner of a cross street and wait. Then I walked back a block, turned the corner, checked the numbers until I came to the driveway which led into Lunk's place. It's a little square house tacked onto the garage and..."
I know, Mason interrupted. "I was inside the place. What did you do?"
"I saw the house was dark, so I barged up on the steps and rang the doorbell. Big as life." No one answered. "I kept leaning against the doorbell and couldn't hear it ring, so I started to knock, and then I noticed that the front door wasn't quite closed."
"Believe me, Chief, I wished I'd been a mind reader right then and there and known what you wanted me to do. But after a while, I pushed the door open, and I went in."
"Turn on the lights?" he asked.
"Yes."
"What did you find?"
"There was no one in the house. The bed in the front bedroom hadn't been made. In the back bedroom..."
"Wait a minute. How did you get into the back bedroom?"
"Well, through the kitchen or the connecting bathroom."
"The connecting bathroom.
Now, be sure about this, Stella. Were the doors between the two bedrooms open?"
"Yes, about halfway open.
That is, the first door was about half open. The door from the bathroom to the back bedroom was all the way open.
There was a window in the back bedroom that opened out onto an alley. That window was raised, and the wind was coming through there, gentle blowing."
"How about the door from the bedroom into the kitchen?"
"It was open just an inch or two."
"Did you go through it?"
"No, I went into the kitchen by going back through the front bedroom and the living room. But let me tell you about the front bedroom first. Drawers had been pulled out of the bureau and clothes from the closet were piled on the floor."
Mason said, "I know. Let's get back to the kitchen. Did you look in the pantry?"
"Yes."
"Was the pantry door open or closed?"
"Closed."
"Did you turn on a light in the pantry?"
"No.
I opened the door and enough light came in from the kitchen so I could see there was no one in the pantry. I wanted to make sure. I thought perhaps Franklin Shore had heard the bell ring and decided to hide, just in case it might be someone whom he didn't want to see."
"Did you pay any attention or notice that was any flour on the floor, around the floor, a can in the pantry?"
"No, but I wouldn't have noticed it unless there'd been quite a bit of flour on the floor, because the light was back of me and I was only searching to make certain someone wasn't hiding in there."
"Feel pretty shaky?"
"I'll say. Chills were chasing up one another and down my spine. If Franklin Shore had been standing in that pantry, he'd have scared the boots off of me."
Mason finished the coffee, got up to put the cup and saucer over on the table. He slipped out of his overcoat and stretched his long arms, then lowered them to shove his hands down deep into his pockets. From the little kitchen, the kitten meowed, a preemptive command to be readmitted to the room, which contained human companionship. Della Street opened the door, and the kitten, its stomach bulging with warm milk, marched awkwardly into the room, made a little throaty noise of satisfaction, jumped up on the davenport and settled down, curling its forepaws in under its chest. The alert interest slowly left its eyes, and after a moment they closed enough so white membranes could be seen at the corners as the kitten settled down to purring slumber. Mason, still standing, jerked his head toward the kitten. "Where was Amber Eyes when you came in?"
"Curled up on the sheets, right in the middle of the bed in the front room."
"Near the center of the bed?"
"Yes. The bed sags a little, and there was a low place right near the center. The kitten was curled up, fast asleep."
Mason took his hands from his pocket, hooked his thumbs in the armholes of the vest, and started pacing the floor.
"More coffee?" Della asked.
He might not have heard her, but continued pacing the carpet, head pushed slightly forward, eyes lowered. Abruptly he turned. "Did you notice any tracks on the floor, such as might have been made if the kitten had walked through some white powder?"
Della Street frowned.
"Let me think.
I wasn't looking for anything smaller than a man, and I was scared stiff, but, well, I think there was some cat tracks across the kitchen. I carried away the general impression that it was a place in which a man had been living by himself and that it needed a darn good cleaning. The sheets on the bed in the front bedroom were pretty soiled, and the pillowcase was filthy. The lace curtains needed cleaning. The dish towels were in pretty bad shape. Oh, yeah, just a lot of little things like that. And I think there was something in the kitchen, some cat tracks or something pulled on the floor. Something maybe was spilled there. But the pantry door was closed. You're certain of that?
Yes,
Mason said. How the devil could the kitten have gotten into flour in the pantry and left tracks across the floor? If the pantry door had been closed. It didn't go in when you opened the door, did it?
Della Street thought that over for a few seconds, then shook her head.
It's beyond me. The kitten never moved while I was there.
Mason thoughtfully regarded the sleeping kitten, abruptly picked up his overcoat, whipped it on, and reached for his hat.
Della Street came to stand at his side as he reached for the doorknob. Please, go to bed and get some sleep, Chief. You'll need it.
He looked down at her, and the granite lines of his face softened into a smile.
Get some yourself. You'll need it.
When you were in the house, did you notice a calling card on the ashtray with George Albers' name and some handwriting written on it?
A card there? A card? I didn't notice the name on it. Why?
Oh, nothing. Just forget it. He circled her waist with his arms, drew her close to him. She raised half-parted lips. His other arm circled her shoulder. For a moment, he held her close, then said, "Keep a stiff upper lip, kid. I think we've pulled a boner." Slightly opening the door, he slipped out into the hallway. Chapter 18. Della Street fought against the clamor of the alarm clock. Her sleep-drugged struggle against the first spasm of ringing was successful. The bell ceased its clanging summons, and Della slipped off once more into deep slumber, only to be aroused by the irritating insistence of the second alarm. She raised herself on one elbow, eyes still closed, groped for the shutoff. The clock eluded her, making it necessary for her to open her eyes. The clock was not in its accustomed place by the bed, but over on the dresser where she had placed it as a precaution against shutting it off and going back to sleep. Reluctantly, she threw back the covers, swung her legs out of the bed, and started for the clock. A faint meow of protest came from the bed. It took her a moment to account for that strange sound. Then, switching off the alarm, she pulled up the covers, which she had thrown back over amber eyes. The kitten curled in a warm little nest on the top of the bed, purred its gratitude, got to its feet, arched it back, stretched, yawned, made two awkward zigzag cat jumps, which brought it within reaching distance of Della Street's fingers. The kitten accepted the ministrations of Della's fingertips behind her ears, venturing in purring exploration over the slippery treachery of the rounded bedclothes, seeking to regain the warmth of Della Street's body. Della laughed and pushed the cat away. "Not now, Amber Eyes. The strident clang of the alarm calls me to the industry." She knew that she didn't have to get to the office on time, but there were some matters in the mail which needed attention. A new typist was working on an important brief, and Della knew she'd have to check over the brief before letting Mason see it for the final reading. Warm needles of water from the shower, the scented lather of the soap, at last the sting of the cold water tingled into her life. She vigorously toweled her skin into glowing health, inspected stockings for possible runners, and was standing before the mirror in her underthings, getting her face made up, when the buzzer on her inner door exploded into noise. For a while, Della ignored it. Then she opened the door a scant inch, said, "Go away, I'm a working girl. I don't want to buy anything. I can't subscribe to anything, and I'm late for the office now." Lieutenant Tragg's voice said, "Well, I'll drive you down to the office. That will save time." Della Street tilted her head, placing her eyes close to the crank on the door so that she could see Lieutenant Tragg's face. "How'd you get past the street door?"
"It's a secret. You look sleepy." "You look worse than that," Tragg grinned. "As far as I can tell, no one west of the Mississippi got any sleep last night."
"I'm dressing. How long will it take you to finish?"
5, 10 minutes. Breakfast? Not here. I grab a cup of coffee at the drugstore on the corner. Bad for the health to eat that way, he told her. Swell for the figure. I'll wait outside the door, he said. Is it that important? It's that important, Trag said. Della closed the door. Her mirror showed her reflection of a scowling countenance. She moved over to the telephone, picked up the receiver, started to dial Mason's unlisted number, then changed her mind, dropped the receiver back into place, got her dress on, kicked off the bedroom slippers, put on shoes, and then realized the problem presented by the kitten. She snatched the little fluff up fur up into her arms, said softly, "Now listen, my love, that cop outside eats kittens, eats them alive. What's more, he'll want your presence explained. And frankly, you'd be harder to laugh off than a man under the bed. It's the kitchen for you, kid. And I'm praying that lots of warm milk will keep you quiet." Amber eyes purred contentedly. Della Street stepped out into the little kitchenette, poured some top milk from a bottle, warmed it until it felt just the right temperature, then fed the kitten. "The doctor says you aren't to have anything solid," she told Amber Eyes, "and unless you want to give the show away, you've got to be a good little kitten and keep your mouth shut. A good full stomach should help, so go ahead, fill up." Purring its pleasure, the kitten lapped up the warm, creamy milk, and Della slipped quietly out of the kitchen, gently closed the door so Trag wouldn't hear the click of the latch. She hastily threw the covers back into place on the bed, tucked the sheet in, fluffed the pillows, placed them in clips at the front of the door, and pushed the bed back up against the wall, turning the revolving door so that the bed was concealed in the closet. She pushed the chairs back into position, working against time. She put on her street coat, adjusted her hat more by instinct than any desire for facial adornment, opened the door, and gave Lieutenant Trag the benefit of her best smile. "All ready," she said. "Nice of you to offer to drive me to the office. I suppose, however, it's not entirely philanthropic." "It isn't," Trag said. "A Greek bearing gifts." "Exactly. Nice place you have there. Nice southeast exposure." "Isn't it?" Della said, tugging on the doorknob. "You're all alone here?" "Of course." Trag took a step forward so that his shoulder blocked the closing door. "Tell you what, Miss Street, we may as well talk in here for just a minute. I haven't time. I've got to be at the office." "I think this is more important than being at the office," Trag said. "Well, we could talk in your car, or..." "It's hard to talk driving a car," Trag said, moving in onto the apartment and walking apparently in a most casual manner over to the Davenport. Della Street sighed in exasperation and stood in the doorway, fully aware of the fact that his sharp, police-trained eyes were taking in every detail. "I'm sorry, Lieutenant, but I simply have to get to work. I haven't time either to be interviewed or to argue about being interviewed, and I can't leave you here." Trag apparently didn't hear her. "Certainly a nice place. Well, if you missed, I'll come along, although I'd prefer to talk here." He paused, apparently to adjust his tie in the mirror, but Della realized that from the position in which he was standing, he could see a reflection of the bathroom through the open door. "Will you please come, Lieutenant?" "Coming. Lord, I certainly look as though I've been up all night. You won't mind driving with such a disreputable specimen." "Just so we get started," Della said. "What's this door?" Trag asked, indicating the kitchen door. "It's a door. Surely you've seen a door before, Lieutenant. They're composed of wood. They're hung on hinges, and they swing back and forth." "Oh, do they indeed," Trag said, his eyes fastened on the door. Della Street came angrily back into the apartment. "Now you look here," she said sharply. "I don't want to keep this up. I don't know what you're after. You're not going to come in and snoop around my apartment anytime you want to. If you want to search my place, go get a warrant. If you have anything to say to me, say it on the way to the office. I'm starting now and you're getting out." Trag looked into the angry defiance of her eyes and said with an ingratiating smile, "Surely, Miss Street, you don't object to my looking around your apartment." "I most certainly do." "Why? Are you hiding something?" I give you my word of honor, there's no other human being in this apartment except myself. Now, does that satisfy you? He met the steady anger of her eyes and said, yes. So she let him start first for the door, following along closely behind him, this time ready to slam the door shut and let the spring lock snap into position. Trag was just stepping over the threshold, and Delastreet's hand was on the doorknob when there came an ear-piercing scream of feline anguish, a scream which changed both its pitch and location with great speed. Oh, my heavens! Delastreet exclaimed, suddenly remembering that she had habitually left the kitchen window open for a few inches for ventilation. There was no mistaking that sound. This was no mere cry of feline impatience, but a squall of agony. That cry appealed to the maternal in Delastreet. She would no more have abandoned that kitten to its fate in order to save herself from a felony charge than she would have refused to rush to the aid of a child. Lieutenant Trag was right behind her as she raced through the apartment living in room into the kitchenette. His head was at her shoulder as she flung open the kitchen window. What happened was only too apparent. The pulley which held the manila rope of the clothesline was fastened directly beside the kitchen window. Amber eyes, crawling to the sill and peering out, had been intrigued by the rope. He had hooked a paw around it, and in trying to withdraw that paw, his claws had caught and held. As his weight came against the clothesline, it had started to slide through the well-oiled pulley. There was plenty of slack in that line, and Amber eyes had found himself sailing out through space at a dizzying height above the ground. His other paw had locked around the clothesline, leaving him hanging head downward, squalling with pop-eyed terror, his tail switching back and forth, then fluffing out to huge proportions. "You poor thing!" Delastreet exclaimed, reaching for the upper rope, and started pulling Amber eyes in. "Hang on now, kitty, hang on! Don't let go!" The cat swayed to and fro, eyes shifting from Delastreet in the safety of the window to the courtyard far below. Tag grinned. The grin became a chuckle, and as Della brought the kitten to within reaching distance and clutched it in her hand, the chuckle became a burst of laughter. Not only did Amber Eyes have no intention of letting go, but terror had locked his claws into the rope so that Della had to disengage them as though they had been so many fish hooks. She held the trembling little body close to her, speaking reassuringly to it, quieting its fear. "Go on and laugh," she blazed at Lieutenant Trag. "I suppose you think this is funny." "I do for a fact," Trag admitted. "The cat makes a playful swipe at the rope, and the next thing he knows, he's flying through the air with the greatest of ease. It must have been a startling sensation for the kitten." "Startling," Della said indignantly. "I'm glad you think it's funny." "I didn't know you had a kitten," Trag said. "Indeed. I suppose the police department feels aggrieved that I should have adopted a kitten without consulting it. I suppose if I should tell you that my Aunt Rebecca had sprained her ankle ice skating, you'd call me on the carpet because I let her go without permission from the police. If you'll just let me get to the office, I'll write you a letter. Dear Lieutenant Trag, I have a kitten. Does it meet with your approval?" Lieutenant Trag said, "This is a very effective burst of indignation and sarcasm, but it doesn't tell me anything about the cat, and it isn't distracting my attention in the least." "Oh, is that so? How long have you had the cat?" "Not very long." "What do you mean by that? It isn't a very old kitten. Have you ever had it since it was born?" "No." "About how long then?" "Not so very long. Long enough to get to feel attached to it. You know how it is. After an animal has been with you a few weeks, or as far as that's concerned, even a few minutes, if you love animals, you get to feeling an attachment that..." "Has the cat been with you a few weeks?" Trag asked. "No, I suppose not. Even a few days. I fail to see where this concerns you in any way," Trag said. "Ordinarily, I would say you were quite right, Miss Street, but there are some circumstances which might alter the case." "Such as what?" she asked impulsively, and then wished she had kept her mouth shut, realizing that she had given him just the opening he had been angling for. Oh, well, Trag said casually, in case the kitten happened to be the one that belonged to Miss Matilda Shore, you know, the one that had been poisoned last night. Even so, what would that have to do with it? The question of how that cat came into your possession, Trag said, might be interesting to the police. However, as you suggested, we can talk it over while we're riding to the office. Yes, I'm late. Trag's smile was apologetic. Perhaps, he said, you are not referring to the same office that I am. She turned to face him, fighting back a wobbling fear in her knees. You know perfectly well to what office I am referring, Della Street said, managing to keep firmness in her voice. Lieutenant Trag was not the least bit impressed. He announced, I am referring to the office of the district attorney, and you may as well bring the kitten along. Not only does it seem to be too careless to be left alone, but it may be a bit of very significant evidence. That's the end of Chapter 18. In Chapter 19, we'll find out if they make it to the district attorney's office, and if so, what transpires. In The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner. Well, we've come to the end of today's program. I do hope you enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our life and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Sun Sounds of Arizona and for Animal Companions. Stay healthy, everyone. Be well, be happy. Bye-bye.